Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan in with you for the next few weeks for Joe, sitting in for Joe. And I want to go straight away now to John. John, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Katie. How are you today?
We're very well in here, John. How are you? You've been through a tough time there with your property.
I've been through the ringer, to be honest. It has been a very tough 7 or 8 months now.
Take us right to the very, very beginning. So you're a landlord. How many properties do you have?
Oh, just one. There is one property that we are renting out and another property that my family lives in with me.
Okay.
This is not some big operation or anything like that.
Okay.
So the first house I had bought in Dublin, I've been renting it out for a few years now. The tenant that is currently in the property moved in January of last year, and they have not paid 1 cent of rent since November of last year, which has left me and my family covering the mortgage, the insurance, the everything on that property, as well as on the place where we live. To date, it's more than €14,000.
Did this tenant give a reason for suddenly stopping paying the rent?
Absolutely no explanation has been given. So as soon as the tenant stopped paying rent, the letting agent started working the process, which is warning periods and notification periods and all of that, and the tenant simply ignored them all. And then when it got to an eviction notice, the tenant ignored the eviction notice, at which point it moved into the RTB and getting in the waiting list to get a hearing with the RTB. So that took 5 or 6 months just to get that hearing. That was at the beginning of May.
Okay, and we'll get back to that in a moment. But I mean, there's salt in the wound here for you, though, John, and this is why this is a particular case is particularly galling, I'm sure, because you discovered that this tenant, who is not paying you a penny rent since last November, was making money out of your house.
They were making money by letting it on Airbnb and other similar sites. And Airbnb were making money off my house, because they make 80 or 90 euro every time they complete a booking. And none of that was being done with my permission. And I actually, once I became aware of it, once we got evidence of it, I contacted Airbnb and I told them to take down the ads. And they effectively just shrugged their shoulders and said, "This is a matter between you and the host. It has nothing to do with us."
The host being this tenant who's not paying you any rent.
Yes, yes.
And so how did you find out about the Airbnb side of this? Did you see it yourself, or did somebody alert you to it?
The letting agent had some evidence of it, and my partner did a lot of digging. She found all of the advertisements on Airbnb and other sites, and she actually contacted people who had let it through Airbnb via social media, and three or four of them were very good enough to confirm that they stayed at my address. And so we put all of this evidence to Airbnb, and they said, "Look, nothing to do with us.
None of our business." Even though they're making money out of it.
They're making money off my property while I am losing money on my property. And they say it has nothing to do with them.
Can you actually access the property?
I was able to. The tenant had denied access for months, and even though the letting agent had made appointment after appointment and agreed a schedule to visit it, at the last minute the tenant just said, "I can't make it." But we were able to visit it about a week ago and actually talk with the tenant. There's still no commitment of when they're going to leave, but that was the first time that the property had been, we'd been able to visit the property for months.
Where are you at now with the ongoing process with the RTB?
So the RTB have issued a adjudication, which is the opinion of the adjudicator, that the eviction notices that we issued were valid and correct, and the tenant should have left in February. But that went through an appeals process where the tenant did not appeal, and it is now waiting for a final determination to be issued. But this hearing was in the beginning of May. It was 7 weeks ago. The tenant admitted that they had not paid any rent. And 7 weeks later, I'm still waiting for a clearance from the RTB, the final clearance to say, yes, this tenant has to go.
And sorry, the tenant came straight up and said, we haven't paid any rent. Did they give a reason for it at that point?
Nope. Just acknowledged that rent had not been paid since November of last year. No explanation. Just
And even at that point, with the tenant putting their hands up, there is still a process. You're still awaiting this final...
Well, exactly. This is the craziness of it. It's not the RTB thing is not a legal hearing, but you know, in common language terms, they admitted, they pled guilty to it in this hearing, but the hearing still continued. We're still waiting for the final decision. I mean, this has been crippling for my family financially, emotionally. It's been so stressful. I can't imagine how many other people are going through this process. And the point I really want to make clear to you is this is not a landlords versus tenants argument. What is happening to me is hurting decent potential tenants because my house is not available to them to rent. And I really wonder how many other houses are being tied up in this process that also are not available to rent.
Have you been able to have any contact directly with this tenant? I mean, have you asked them why are they doing this?
I spoke to them when we visited the house 1 week ago. They did not give a coherent explanation for what has happened and why it has happened. But they have had 7 months now to say anything, and they've not put forward any information.
But I'm just intrigued as to what they actually say to you when they're confronted with you. Have they acknowledged that they're renting it, subletting it on Airbnb?
During the hearing, they contested that. But when I met with them and the letting agent met with them a week ago, and we said to them, look, we have spoken to the people who stayed at this address, and they confirmed it was this address. She either conceded the point or no longer contested the point.
So she did actually deny originally at the hearing that she was doing this.
Which is why my partner did a lot of digging and talked to a lot of people. But the eviction is valid based on not having paid rent, based on denying access to the property.
This is just the added extra thing, as
exactly,
I said, salt in the wound for you in terms of how this is. I'm looking at what Airbnb said to you in relation to this. When we talk to them, they say that they don't own, operate, manage or control accommodation, which of course is perfect for them, isn't it? It absolves them of all sorts of responsibility and opens the door for this kind of activity.
Well, I mean, they're taking payment through their site. They're controlling communications with any host through their site. They're making money off it. To say that they're not, that they have no involvement in letting of properties, it makes no sense. It flies in the face of common sense.
And this can't be the only place where this is happening. You know, people taking over properties and then subletting them.
Again, I really want to make the point. I understand there's a lot of renters who are frustrated. I understand the availability issue and all of those cost and availability. But if this type of problem is allowed to go on, And you can't get any help from anyone, then the rental market will continue to be broken.
How much, I mean, remind me again, you say, how much rent have you foregone now? Have you not been able to collect since last November?
It's about 14,000 euro.
Have you any sense at all of how much money this tenant has made out of your house since?
So one of the questions I asked Airbnb was, how many times have you let my house? I asked them how many times they'd let my house out and they refused to answer it. There are, on the Airbnb site, there's like 10 or 15 reviews. Each time someone stays there is 250 euro. So you can, you know, not everyone leaves a review, right? But I can't I can't answer the question of how many times it's been used.
But we know it multiple times. Multiple times, John, is one thing we do know.
Yes, oh, 100%.
And do they like staying in your house? I'm just wondering, what are the reviews saying?
So the house was for a period advertised on Booking.com, and Booking.com seemed to have taken it down because there were so many negative reviews, people saying they didn't feel safe, other people were coming into the house. Mm. To credit of Booking.com, they never had my permission to advertise it, but when people said they didn't feel safe, Booking.com seemed to have stopped advertising it.
How has this been for you? I mean, it's obviously a massive financial burden.
It's just, honestly, it has been so stressful. My partner and I have really struggled to even talk about it at times because we get so emotional. We're tied up in not knowing when this is going to end because no one can give us a time frame for when I can have this tenant removed and get my house back. And it's holding up parts of our life that, you know, a week ago I had to put groceries back on the shelf because I didn't have the money to buy a week's worth of shopping for me and the kids.
Oh, John, that is shocking. A shocking situation.
That's the result of following the legal process.
I'm looking at the RTB response. And the RTB are saying that the average processing time, and this is quite shocking, the average processing time in weeks for adjudication and mediation and tribunal applications, this is going back over the last number of years. The latest year we have is 2022, and at that stage it was 31.48 weeks.
And in my case, the tenant admitted everything in the hearing. The tenant has not submitted one document of evidence, has not been required to do anything, that has retained the full protection of this system. And I really want to stress, this is not landlords versus tenants, but when I get my house back, I'm going to sell it because I can't go through this again. Financially and emotionally, I can never rent again in the Irish market. And if I'm a decent landlord and I'm leaving the market and other decent landlords are leaving the market, who do you think is going to be left as landlords in a few years' time? It will be people who just don't care what the rules are and use unsavory tactics to keep the tenants in line. And that isn't to the advantage of tenants either.
So I'm looking again. We have a statement here from the RTB, and they're talking about enforcement is an important function of the Residential Tenancies Board, and they say that they receive when you bring your disputes to the board, they receive a legally binding determination order which outlines the time period in which the order must be complied with. So do you not have that then? Like this is, and they're saying the majority of these are complied with, but they take non-compliance with determination orders very seriously. So you're still waiting for the order, is that it?
So 7 weeks after the hearing where the tenants admitted it, I still don't have that determination order. And I emailed them this morning saying, when is this coming? So 7 weeks later, I still don't have the determination order. And I believe the tenant will get a 2-week notice period after that determination order is issued.
That's just, it just goes on and on.
It's farcical. Decent landlords will be driven out of the market, and that should make everyone fearful about who are the landlords that are going to remain in the market. Because I can't sustain this. Other honest people can't sustain this.
You just look at it and it's patently, it's not working for you. It's not fit for purpose, clearly. When, as you say, you have on the one hand a tenant that has no explanation, no reason, no excuse, no evidence. And yet here you are. How many months later are we now since November?
Seven and a half months.
It's a shocking situation. Will you hang on there, John? I've got another.
I will.
I've got another caller on the line, Mark.
Hi,
I have Mark? Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you,
Mark? You also have some properties with tenants in them.
Correct, I do. I have not a massive amount, but I have a number of them. But I was just listening to John there, and I my heart goes out to him. I know the situation he's in. The only recommendation I could make to him is to be a little bit cheeky and to go on to Airbnb and rent back out his own property.
But how would that work?
He's just like a normal client like I am or you are, and he goes on to Airbnb website and rents back his own property for a period of time and then takes ownership of it.
Oh, sorry, I get you now that you say you're a client looking for to stay in the property.
Yes, and then do exactly what his tenants are doing and take ownership of it, of his own property.
I'll just ask John. Did it ever occur to you to do that, actually?
A number of people have suggested this. The problem is that I cannot make this tenant homeless. I would be at risk of an enormous fine from the ITB if I made this tenant homeless without their determination order. And the other point is, I don't know who might be in that house at any point. And I'm not willing to enter into a dangerous situation or ask other people to enter into a dangerous situation because I don't know who might be there or who might be called over in that situation.
Yeah, so you absolutely have to play by the book, yeah.
I would also add that the tenant seems to only let one room at a time such that someone else, they or someone else is there to make that scenario difficult. But the legal way of doing this shouldn't be so bad that people have to take that action.
Yeah.
I mean, it shouldn't be constructed that way, that you're effectively forced to do that.
I'm really struck by what you said about having to put some groceries back on the shelf last week because you are so much to the pin of your collar because of this financial strain that this has put you under. I mean, that is just such a shocking situation, as you say, and now we're 7 weeks down the line and what you need now is just for that determination. And have you been on to the RTB and asked them what's going on?
I sent them an email this morning. I talked on the phone and sent an email to them last week and the week before. I'm told it's in process, you know, but there's no ETA or anything like that.
And every passing week is costing you.
Yeah, the RTB adjudicators agreed that every day the tenant is in the house is, I think it's €68 or something that they are owing me.
And that's
I don't know if I'll be able to get that back, but that's what it costs each day.
Yeah. Sorry, I'll bring Mark back in. Sorry, Mark. I mean, you can hear, you can understand why John would be anxious, particularly at this point, having dotted every I and crossed every T, not to step over the line now.
I understand. I totally understand. Yeah, I thought it was a smaller apartment property where they were actually renting out the full property on Airbnb. So that would have been.
Have you ever come across this subletting on Airbnb in any? How many properties do you have let out, Mark?
I have about five at the moment, but I had probably close to 10, but due to the way it's so difficult to get good tenants that I'm selling them sort of year by year. So over the last couple of years, I've sold a number of them just to get out of the market. But I would have built up over a 15 or 20 year period about up to 10.
And you're down to five now. But again, have you ever come across this subletting?
Yes, it's quite common at the moment, actually.
Is it? Quite common?
Yeah, it's getting more common. But I look, it's very, very difficult to get really nice, really good tenants.
I find that hard to believe, though, Mark, because, I mean, you have the pick of the bunch now. People are, you know, we all know how difficult it is to get a good place to live, a decent accommodation now. And we know that there's long queues for every apartment that comes up. So surely out of that, you can find decent people who just want to keep a roof over their heads.
I think, yeah, you're right. But I think when nice, good tenants get a property, they don't tend to move. So they're in situ for quite a long period. But there's an awful lot of poorer tenants out there than there is nice tenants. I can guarantee that from having properties over the years.
I'm sorry to hear that now, but I'm surprised as well because...
Well, yeah, you see, I suppose a lot of where I would have been renting would have been... I would want to half tenants. I would have taken a lot of half tenants. And I felt from having half tenants that because they're not really paying for only a small portion of it and it wasn't, they didn't really care about the property, if you understand me.
Yeah,
they really didn't.
Yeah, and well, we don't want to blacken every HAP tenant out there because what we know now is that half the country are HAP tenants now. There's so many people
I have some HAP tenants, and they're brilliant. But there's certain number of people, and look, I would have had lots of tenants over the years, and some of them have been fantastic, and the majority, it's probably. I would say maybe 30% nice, good tenants and 70%. It's just a nightmare.
70% of your tenants have been nightmare tenants?
Yeah, I would go as far as to say that, yeah. But like I'm just saying as in damaging the property, not paying rent, paying portions of rent, not paying on time. A list of things that it just goes on and on.
Presumably in some cases people genuinely get into difficulty and are struggling to pay the rent. I mean, what's your attitude to that when it does happen?
I'd be absolutely no problem working with people like that. I honestly, God, I would have. I've often been in that situation myself years ago, so I've no problem, and I would be very genuine with tenants, and I'd help them as much as I could.
Have you been through the RTB process yourself?
No, I've gone close to it, but we didn't go that far. I'd be pretty good at sorting it out with tenants myself.
And how would you do that? How does that work? I'll tell you, we've got a call in here. Somebody who said he didn't want to come on air because they were afraid of their tenant, this landlord, and said his advice would be to give them money to leave. And he said, threshold, give free legal support. He said, pay them. I wish you luck. Being a landlord is a nightmare. The tribunal process is so horrendous. Would you have paid off people to get them out of properties in the past?
I probably wouldn't have paid them off, but I would have given them maybe deposits back, which they didn't deserve, because just to get them out. That would be as far as I've gone, but no, other than that, I would have just been under case a little bit, probably every day or whatever, and eventually they move on to their next place.
Yeah, you see, when you say that there, I'm reminded. I mean, it's a good while since I was in the rental market, but I had a lot of landlords over the years, and more than one of them refused to give back a deposit that was entirely warranted, that there was absolutely nothing wrong with the property, but they just refused. So what I'm saying is that this does cut both ways, Mark.
I agree, and I know of tenants or landlords that would be very reluctant to give a deposit back, even if the house is in perfect condition.
Yeah, they just regard it as their money once it's handed over.
Yeah, yeah, they use it to paint it or whatever when the tenant moves out or whatever. But no, I wouldn't be like that. But I would be very fair and honest. And if somebody was honest and fair back, there's no issues. But the current situation now is honestly the tenants you'd have in are a lot more aggressive and a lot more more willing to just sit there and not pay and don't really, like years ago when I was renting, you know, you'd have to make sure you'd left the house in a good condition to get your reference for the next property, but that's no problem now. It doesn't care. People don't care.
But why is that? Because surely references have never been more important now, given what you're saying, that there is, you know, you're so worried about getting a new tenant and what kind they'll be. Surely references is the one thing you can rely on. to...
It doesn't seem to be an issue with, in my situation anyway. Any tenants I've had over the years, and I have been in properties since probably close to 20 years, about 19 years. It's just, I think what that texter said in is right. A lot of people are, a lot of landlords are probably a bit afraid of their tenants.
And yet people will say, and I mean, it has been said, that the legal protections for tenants are still behind what would be in place in lots of other European countries.
That may be with the RTP, but Katie, from my experience of the RTP, I'm not dissing the RTP or anything, but it seems to be a very one-sided, the tenants, no matter if they are doing everything right or if they're doing everything wrong, they still have all the power.
Yeah, I have heard other landlords complain about that. I'm sure the RTB would dispute that fully. They say they mediate from both sides. But can I just hang on for me there, Mark, if you wouldn't mind. I just asked John. John, what would, prior to this situation that you've found yourself in, did you have a good experience with tenants up to this?
Yeah, so the only other tenants who'd been in the house were there during COVID. It was a couple. They were perfectly reasonable people. During COVID, they were on reduced hours, so they reached out to me and said they were having trouble with the rent. So I reduced the rent for several months. I never asked for them to pay that money back. Later on, during the time they were there, there was a maintenance issue in the house that made it quite smelly. And because that was slow to be fixed, I forgave a full month's rent. So, you know, I can demonstrate to you being a perfectly decent and approachable landlord.
You sound like the landlord sent from heaven, John, really. You sound like the perfect landlord.
I was happy to rent out a house to reasonable people. I really want to stress that this is not landlords versus tenants.
Yeah.
This is this process of working through the RTB and working it correctly is so slow as to be practically impossible for a landlord to follow it without going through this pain. And that shouldn't have to be the case. You know, there's no reason for this 7 weeks delay, 7 weeks and counting delay, for this determination order. There's no reason for these almost endless notice periods that the tenant has access to. And
I wonder, is it that the RTB
certain people will be hiding behind and taking advantage of these protections such that houses like mine are not available to rent to decent people?
Yeah, I was
because
just,
they're being occupied.
Sorry to cut across you, John. I was just wondering if maybe the RTB itself is under pressure in terms of trying to work their way through the disputes that are before them, and that's contributing to these delays.
Look, I can't speak to that, but maybe they should publish data that's more recent than 2022. You know, if they stand up and say the system doesn't work, then it needs to be changed. That's their job. The interim determination that they've given, the interim adjudication, was that the eviction notice that was issued in January for the tenant to be out in February was valid. So the tenant should have been gone in February. But by the tenant just doing nothing, they've retained all of these protections. And that is to the detriment of me, and it will be to the detriment of decent potential tenants as well.
Yeah, for all, as you say, for both sides, for landlords and tenants, this needs to work. We need a healthy private rental sector, and
people should not be motivated to occupy a property and let it on Airbnb and have companies like Airbnb shrug their shoulders at this and say that this has nothing to do with them.
Absolutely, that's a whole other story. That is quite extraordinary. I have a lot
of just motivating and facilitating people to do the action that's happened to them.
Yeah. John, will you hang on? And I've several, there's loads of calls coming in on this, so I want to come back to this, but I do need to take a quick break. We'll be back to this after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we've been talking to John, who has now is over 7 months with a tenant in a property, a rental property, who hasn't paid any rent and who has been renting out that property herself and making money from Airbnb on that house. I want to bring in Áine now. Áine, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you? Just listen here and listen to poor John. That story is horrendous. Like, to be honest, one of the things, I rented out four properties over the years. I just got rid of one last year. And first of all, I'd say that I never once gave my properties to an agent, because nobody cares about your property like yourself. And I would always meet with the tenant and develop somewhat of an eyeball and a relationship with them. And agencies don't care at the end of the day. And I'd say there's a lot of agencies going mad listening to me now. But, you know, they're businesses and they want their commission, and that's what it's about. And they will put anybody into the house.
Okay, I'm going to say they are obviously going to dispute that and say that it's in all their interest that they have tenants that the landlord is happy with and that will pay the rent in the properties.
Of course, of course. And maybe in the majority of cases I've seen with friends of mine and relations of mine who've had a very bad experience with agencies, and like John there, couldn't get rid of the tenants, and to the extreme that the tenants were actually destroying the property to the extent that they were using the banisters for firewood. So, you know...
And using, yes, sorry, using the banisters for firewood.
Yeah. And get this as well, that the RTP went in favour of these people and wouldn't get them out because they had all the rights. The RTP are totally in favour of the tenant. But my first point is, if you really care about your property and it's a big investment, which it always is, do the renting yourself. Do it. You know, develop the relationship with them. That, you know then who you have in there. Now, if you have 10 properties, that might sound like a headache to do that. But once it's set up and done, it's done. And you know who you have in your home.
Can I ask you? Yeah, because Mark, I was shocked that Mark said that, you know, and he had over the years rented 10 properties, up to 10 properties. And he said that he reckoned 70% of his tenants were not good. That's a shocking.
I've never had a bad tenant.
Yeah. And do you put a lot of that down to, first of all, your instinct in the tenants that you put in, and then this relationship you say, a one-on-one relationship you build?
Yeah. Without
doubt. I find it very hard to believe that 7 out of 10...
So do I, to be honest. Tenants, that sounds really high, and he must have been quite unfortunate, to be honest, because that sounds really high. Because
especially in a world where people are so desperate for accommodation, you know, you are not going to say boo, actually, and many times I would say, even when things aren't right, because you're afraid of upsetting the apple cart.
Yeah, if you put out an ad today, you don't give a phone number, Katie. You put out an email and you start sifting through the emails and call back who you want. The last thing you want is 1,000 phone calls. You know what I mean? You don't even need to put up a phone number at the moment. Yeah. You just literally put your email and you judge by sifting through those. But the other thing I'll say as well is that, you know, the government never realised what a housing resource they had in private landlords until rates start going up. It became unviable for landlords to continue their business, and they're running. But also, any penny rent you get from your tenant, half of that is going to the government on tax. So if you give half of that on tax, what the government should have looked at, if they really need this resource as a housing resource, that do something for the landlords on the tax front, because literally 50% of what you earn is going to them.
Yeah, well, that's the government have been talking about looking at this.
Too late.
For some time, exactly. We've been hearing about
landlords are running. Landlords are running. And that's why there's quite a crisis in the market for housing, because landlords are absolutely running.
Will you hang on, Áine? I want to go to Mary. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Mary, you also have a property out for rent?
No, I don't.
You have rent? Okay.
I did.
You do Airbnb. Sorry, Mary.
For Airbnb for a little while, some time ago. Yeah. So my conversation with you will come at it from that angle.
Yeah.
The owner of the property said there he seems to understand that one room is rented at a time. That's quite possible, but it's also possible if the property has more than one room that is advertised under different listings. For instance, Blue Dolphin, White Shark, Red Eagle. If there are three rooms in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, okay. So there could be three strangers in the house at the same
time. There could be three groups of strangers in the house. So they may be getting multiple incomes.
Right.
I'm making that clear.
Yes.
Two, if the owner wishes, he should go and book a room himself. I heard his concern that he doesn't want to make them homeless. It's very noble of him. They're not quite as noble towards him.
Mm-hmm.
Or to get his friend or friends to do so. After staying in the property, give the worst possible review. It's under cleanliness, it's under organisation, it's under booking, and I've forgotten some of them because it's quite a while ago since I hosted. So when you stay, you're given automatically a post to give a review from Airbnb. So give the worst possible reviews. Where am I going with this?
Yeah.
After 7, it used to be 10, I think it's down to 7, I'm subject to correction on that. Very poor reviews, Airbnb will delist the property.
Oh, so this is a way to get the property delisted.
This is a way to get the property delisted.
And I believe there are some negative reviews up there from what John was telling us already, but I mean, you'd have to actually go and stay or at least pay for the rate. And God knows, John has given this person enough.
No, but what John does then, are his friends, and I would say friends, you know, if he wants to keep his own slate clean, what he would do then is look for his money back. Because if this property was not up to your expectations, you, Airbnb, have to refund the booker the money.
I know. But you know, Mary, the more I talk, think about this, this is daft that you'd even have to think about going around it this way, when actually there should surely be a situation where you could get in touch with Airbnb, prove to them that this is your property, that you are not the host that is offering the rooms for on Airbnb, and that it should just be stopped there, that there should be no carry on of having to give, you know, rent it out or pretend to be somebody else and give a negative review. It's just honestly, the more I think about it, the more daft it is.
I don't know how the current people in that property have circumvented that, because they did do in the past a quite thorough research to show that you were the owner of the property.
Well, as John was told, that they didn't have any responsibility for what was happening, and what was the line? That they don't own, operate, manage or control accommodations. And that if he wanted to go through their host notification process, then his private contact... Oh, this was it, that you'd have to share the private contact information. And John did not want to go down that road with this particular tenant for obvious reasons. Mary, thank you for that. I want to bring in Joe now. Joe, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What's your angle on this, Joe?
Well, I had the same experience as John to a large extent. I had I rented out a property and they Airbnb'd it. My wife found it one evening. Actually, we were at dinner. For her sister sent it to her saying, look, well done, you're on Airbnb. And I immediately investigated. One of the things that John didn't raise, or at least I wasn't here when John did raise it, is that you're entirely uninsured as a landlord when they Airbnb without your permission. Because your landlord tenancy, your landlord's insurance with regard to third party lapses. Not with regard to the building, but with regard to third party. If somebody falls down the stairs, they're going to come after you. Now, people will say, oh, of course, no, of course, we have the Airbnb insurance. But in fact, the Airbnb insurance doesn't have your name on it. Therefore, it's not to you. It's not assigned to you. It's to do with the tenants that are renting it out. So when the tenants are long gone, and mine are long gone, you run the risk for 3 years of an adult coming to you and making a claim and the possible risk of somebody who was a child reaching their adulthood coming after you for a claim if they fell down the stairs. That's a real long range risk.
Many years later.
Well, that'll be 17 years from, I suppose from the year dot, it'll be 18 years, but it'll be 70. So that's what I was informed by my insurance brokers, that that was my risk. So I ended it immediately, just invited the tenants to leave, and they did. Smart enough.
You were lucky enough from what we're hearing from John.
Well, yeah, but I have no desire to put people. I rent my I hope you rent them for much longer because I get the heck out of Dodge. But I rent them generally 10, 15, 20% below the market rate because then people are very glad they've got a place. They've got a place where they are because they're sort of in a reasonably good place, and they tend to look after the place very well. And they get really, really, really good tenants in general. The 10 or 20% doesn't make any difference to me because the taxman takes it anyway. So there's no value in it for me. I might make a 10 or 20 quid on it, but that's about it. Whereas the solace for me of having a good tenant who wants to be there, is happy to be there, and surprised they can get it for the money they have, then that's much
and are
more
going
important.
To, yeah, are going to go to great lengths to hang on to it. And,
well, I don't get wrong for bulbs.
Yeah.
This kind of thing, and if the
because they appreciate
falls
that,
over,
yeah, they appreciate that
yeah.
that
they take it out of the rent and they go on take yeah. the washing machine out of the rent and they go. So it's low maintenance. The problem about it is, of course, that every renovation you have to absorb the cost of it yourself and then spread it over 5 years, which is nonsense. There's no point in it. Being a private landlord in Ireland is long past its sell-by date.
And you know what? I just can't. This is the thing that's hard for people to get their head around, because obviously we've all seen rents doubled over the last 10 or 15 years. And yet I talk to people like yourself all the time who say we just can't. It's not paying for itself anymore. It's not the investment it was. How do you square that circle?
Well, I suppose, simply 50% of it goes to the taxman. Then you got all the additional costs, being a member of this, being a member of that, all the things you have to be under all of the statutes. You then have to pay for the insurance, and you have all this kind of costs. All of the business costs, they all should be coming out of it, but they all go. And then you're kind of sitting there with your 4 and 9 pence thinking, God, I can't even buy a bar of chocolate with this thing. And so basically that's where that's the problem. The only actual value for a landlord is probably the value of the property. As it increases slightly every year, and the government are going to take 30-35% of that, depending on how much it is. But that's the really, and there's no real point in that. You come to an age where that's got no real value for you.
And are you saying you're not going to once this tenancy is over? Are you talking about getting out of the business as well?
Yeah, I probably will be. I know a group of us get together, about 12, 14 of us, and we got about 100 properties between us in Dublin. We're all out. Just can't be doing it anymore. It's just too.
All of you.
It's just too, all of us. Oh yeah. Well, I'm kind of one of the last people leaving because I have a very good tenant and I don't want to leave them homeless. But ultimately, they have. I have to move on because you can't be doing. Also, the stress of it's very difficult. I ended up with the Residential Tenancy Board with this. So you would think you would win a case like this, but I agree with Anya. It's balanced against you, and. And by the way, you know, I think tenants should have all the rights they have, but landlords should have one or two as well. And it's kind of called fairness or something like that. But anyway, it's unlikely to pertain around here. But it's just being fair to people. So the bottom line here is you're reviled because you're a landlord and you don't make any money out of it. Probably time to go.
Joe. Thank you for that, Joe. I appreciate the call. John, I'll give you just the last word. Do you feel reviled?
Yeah, I hear the comments of people about all of these things. I'm trying to make a larger point. I'm concerned about my kids having to go into the Irish rental market in a few years' time. Mm-hmm. And I'm concerned about what that rental market will look like. So all of these workarounds working around the way that Airbnb behave or working around the slowness of the RTB process. All of those things, I hear what they're saying, but this system should be fixable.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't have to be this way where everyone has to come up with these little schemes to deal with tenants who absolutely should be evicted. It doesn't feel like a big ask for it to be against the law for Airbnb to let your property without your permission. Like, who would argue against me on that point? And I would also make the point, I asked Airbnb for what documentation was provided when they set up this leasing. And again, they refused to tell me.
Okay, I think we'll come back to this one, John. It is really shocking that, as you say, this isn't just an open and shut case, and that people are wondering what way you can work around it. John, the very best of luck to you. I hope you get your determination, and you get into that house soon and get back on your feet. But the very, very best of luck to you.
I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thanks to all our callers on that. We'll take a break, but we're going to be talking about Shania Twain after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, there's a lot of people out there this week dusting down their cowboy hats and their cowboy boots and their tassely jackets. Because next Friday in Malahide Castle, they'll be listening to this.
That don't impress me much.
That's Shania Twain, of course. Dervil, good afternoon.
How you doing?
Dervil, I'm trying to make out how you got into the situation you got in, but so please.
Oh my.
Please tell me. You have, as we stand here today, 36 tickets to Shania Twain on Friday.
Well, according to the app I do, I've paid for 18 of them, of which I only wanted 8. But as of Ticketmaster's app, as of last week, they duplicated every ticket on my account and shown as 36.
Okay, take us back to the very, very start. So how many tickets did you buy initially online?
Initially went in to buy 5.
Right.
And while in the app kept closing down. So it ended up going through with 2 lots of 5. And I assumed it was just an issue with my internet as against Ticketmaster. But I've since realised, no, it's Ticketmaster.
So you ended up then...
2 lots of 5.
Okay.
Which
so you
was
had,
fine.
So you had 10 tickets.
Tickets, yeah. Which at the time I was saying, well, I'm one of a big crew. They'd have all been used. That was no issue.
Right. You have a lot of sisters, I believe.
I do. Big mob.
And are you all Shania Twain fans?
Back, sure, night out, you know yourself. Even if you didn't like it, it'd go. But,
so you ended up...
That was on the 10th of March. And when I logged into my... It was late in the evening on the 10th of March. I logged into my app, Ticketmaster app, on the 12th and got a message. Those tickets were booked to the Dublin event. Mm-hmm. And I'd had the email from Ticketmaster confirming my purchases for the Dublin event on the night of the 10th. I logged into the app on the... afternoon, evening of the 12th, to measure the message saying both orders had been cancelled.
Cancelled.
And when I looked at my bank, they were showing as pending, so they hadn't been debited, obviously, from my account at that point, and assumed that they weren't going to be because they'd cancelled their orders.
And so why did they say they had been cancelled?
It didn't specify. And when I emailed the help section, I thought there's a small print on Ticketmaster that says you've a maximum of 8 tickets per order. But because it'd gone through with 2 lots of 5, I thought possibly that was part of the reason, but it wasn't, as I was to find after. They didn't give me any explanation, and when I emailed them, one of the responses was that the organisers were essentially finalising decisions and I'd be contacted via email, and did I wish to attend the Cork event or the Dublin event? If I'd wanted to go to Cork, I'd have booked Cork.
Indeed.
So that was a non-starter. And when I messaged... Oh, I went ahead then after telling the crew I'd booked tickets. I went ahead and booked tickets for us because I was told my orders had been cancelled. I booked 8 tickets separately under a completely separate order.
What you would do, yeah.
Evening of the 12th. I don't think I looked in on the 13th, but when I looked on the 14th, my tickets, which had not been showing as issued to me and the order had been showing as cancelled, were then showing in my account as active tickets to the Dublin event for the 2 original 10 tickets, 2 lots of 5, plus the 8 I had subsequently bought.
Okay.
So I had 18 tickets.
And you were charged for 18 tickets, were you?
Oh, yes.
So how much was that?
Well, what the excess would be, it's €847.50.
€874.50. Let's hear what Chennai would say about that.
That don't impress me much.
Yeah. Okay. So you're now down almost €900, and yeah, you have 10 more tickets than you actually wanted. But that's not the end of it.
No, I messaged Ticketmaster saying, what's going on here? They told me because the event hadn't been cancelled and there had been no changes on their end, that I wasn't eligible for a refund.
Explain that again. Why weren't you eligible for a refund?
Because they had not cancelled the event, although the screenshots, and I don't normally take screenshots, but I took screenshots of the cancelled tickets for some quite obscure reason. So that, now if I log into my app now, there's no evidence of that. So if this happens to anyone else, you're dealing with a company that has a monopoly of ticket sales in the country, that's uncontactable and essentially unregulated. Because when I rang the CP or CCPC, they advised me to go legal, that they are completely impartial, they couldn't provide a phone number, and that they're law unto themselves. They can do what they want, essentially. And there's no competition in the country, so it's hardly a fair market. When you look at the organisers of the event, I can't remember the names now, both of their sites refer you back to Ticketmaster, that they'll not deal with any issues regarding ticketing. And there's no contact numbers that you can directly phone Ticketmaster on. I don't think English is the first language of a number of the people responding, because they certainly didn't get the gist of many, many messages.
Yeah, and we got on to Ticketmaster as well, just to try and see what they would say to us. And we're still waiting to hear back from them. Now, if they come back to us during the show, we will, of course, come back to that. But are you saying that Ticketmaster were not acknowledging that the original tickets that had been cancelled?
Cancelled. No, not in the slightest. There's no means to forge them the copies. You can't. It's a little help text. There's no even email to email them directly on. It goes to a virtual assistant and somebody emails you back within 24 hours. As of Friday, when I emailed again and said that I was going looking legal and referring it on to yourselves to look at, they have responded to me on Saturday morning stating that it was a duplicate order and that they'd refund one of the orders, so that it'd be for 5 tickets. But I replied back saying, not good enough, I didn't duplicate the order. It isn't a cancelled order. You told me it was cancelled, so therefore I ordered more tickets. But they're not. I haven't had a response to that this morning. Then I got another response. What was the one this morning?
So to cap it all anyway, you have ended up with 36 tickets when you wanted 8.
It's actually 18 tickets.
And you've been charged for 18.
I do think it's 18 tickets that duplicated on the app. So whatever issues Ticketmaster had with them being hacked or their data being accessed a couple of weeks ago, there's obviously more than one issue with Ticketmaster. I have refreshed my app repeatedly and still, as of this morning, showing 36 tickets. But it's actually 18 tickets when you look at the barcodes. They're just duplicated. So,
that's it. One more time.
That don't impress me much.
Okay, Dervil. Yep. Listen, I'm sure you'll enjoy the concert one way or another, and you're looking forward to it. But
so
we hope we'll hear back from Ticketmaster, because that is a very expensive night out if that's what you're landed with at the end of the day.
The message this morning was asking that I wanted to cancel my 3 orders. I was never requested to alter my 3rd order in any way, shape or form. So I'm hoping now in some...
Okay, somebody with a bit of sense comes back, looks at that and sorts you out. Okay, listen, Dervil, the very best of luck. If we hear any more from it, we'll come back to you. Take care.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now we're moving on to something completely different, and I want to talk to John. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon,
Katie.
How are you
keeping? Okay, I actually have two Johns on the line.
Okay, John two.
Let me go to John Collins first. I'll bring in John Collins.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm very good.
And actually, you are one of 3 Johns. If I can complicate matters further, you're a porter in Cork University Hospital. Yeah.
Indeed, yeah.
And when I say you want to, you call yourselves the Three Johnnies, is that right?
The Three Johnnies, yeah. We came up with that. We said, RT had two Johnnies, so we might go, see which Three Johnnies.
Oh, you Cork lads always want to go one better.
Oh, we know. So we didn't go one better yesterday.
Oh,
Louder.
Sore topic.
No, left it behind us.
Indeed. Okay. Tell us about what you guys. So yourself, sorry, it's yourself. You work the night shift, is it?
Yeah, I work nights. I work at GHB, 5A, 5B, Ladybird and Theatre.
Right.
We're covering wards.
And
John Keenan then covers the A&E department and outpatients.
Right.
And the PE section. And John Lennon then is on the block. He's on the fifth floor down to the ground floor, collects all the waste.
Right.
So John gathers them all up for us to collect. We bag them.
Okay, well, we haven't told people what you're doing first. So what you... Because we've heard so many bad stories about this deposit return scheme for bottles and a lot of people giving out and the machine won't take them and they have to bring them back again and all that. Ye have found them to be an incredible blessing for the hospital.
Unbelievable. It's fantastic, really. Like we decided, like, very first day when it started off in February, there was a few of us working together on nights, and we said, lads, so what we do? We collect the bottles in each ward, and we get a Chinese for ourselves at the end of the month. And, it all looked good. All the lads were all for it. Yeah, Johnny, that's brilliant. Someone went home, and I thought about it. I said, lads, we can't do this. I said, because the hospital are buying the bottles. I said, we're taking them out to benefit ourselves. And I said, we can get fired over jobs for this. I said, look, we give it to CUH charity. So they all decided on that. So then there was doctors heard about it, nurses, housekeeping, the other porters, everybody got involved. And we put bags into wards and we started collecting them. Mm-hmm. So after 2 weeks, we had €822. So to date now, we're over €3,100.
My God.
We have collected so far, yeah. Nearly the best part of 20,000 bottles are after recycling.
That's incredible. And it's incredible, isn't it? Because people are saying like 15 cent, would you bother bringing it back for that? But like when there's volume like you have in the hospital, of course people do, want to have these drinks in hospital. And
of course. And that's why we jumped on. We said, like, every patient coming to the hospital drinks a bottle of water, and persons coming to visit them are going to drink a bottle. So I said, they're all going to landfill soon. So we said, no. We said, we won't. We're going to collect them. And we're going to keep them out of the landfill site. And we give the money to the CUH charity.
And tell me about the CUH charity then, John. What does that go towards?
See, the CUH charity caters for a lot of places. They cover the kids' ward. They cover a lot of things. It's the stuff needed in the hospital in general. And we were hoping that if they do buy something, for something in the hospital, we say for the kids' ward, for instance, and just put up, look, this was donated by the Three Johnnies from the recycling of the bottles, and thank you. That's what they're going to do. If they need something in the wards, they're going to use this money towards it. But we said, if you can, let's try to give it to the kids' ward. If they need something, give it to them first. That's what they're doing.
And is there a lot of work in it in terms of, you know, what extra work you have to put in to keep this show on the road?
There's a bit of work, but we get great benefit over it, you see, because we get a kick over when we see the receipts come out. It'll be €32, it'll be €35, and we go then going into the shop. I go into Aldi in Balsihan and Aldi in Grange. John uses Super Value in Glenmire. John Keenan uses another place in Mahon as well, you know. So, like, it takes a bit of time, but we don't care once it's gone to something good. It takes a bit of small bit of time, but there'll be people looking at you and say, oh my God, look at how many three bags, big bags of bottles. And I say, girls, look, it's going to the kids' club and it's going to kids in the CUH. So then a few of the people who were bottling, who were putting in their bottles, they gave me the receipts to put it towards the charity, which was fantastic.
Oh, and isn't that great as well? Yeah, so you've inspired other people.
And like there's another chap, I don't know, Eddie, he was an ex-fire brigade man. He's after coming on board as well, so he's going to get the lads in the fire brigade to keep all the bottles and bring it to CUH for us, so which is fantastic. What a delight with that.
It's fantastic. I mean, I'm laughing at the idea that you thought you might just have enough for a Chinese takeaway at the end of the month. And look at where you're at now.
I know. We were saying that we were laughing at one of the lads. I said, we'd be fat as balloons if we had Chinese every month. We've over 3,000 raised.
which is fantastic. I'm looking
at a photograph of the three of you. You could do it a few Chinese's. I'd say you'd be grand there.
We want to know. Well, we keep ourselves trim. We keep ourselves small but in trim. But we could do a few pounds less as well.
As you say, the best thing about it is it's brought the whole hospital together.
Fantastic.
For this
fantastic
cause.
Like I just say in general, like, it's fantastic. And in fact, like, even if other charities came on board, we don't mind that at all. Once the bottles have been kept out of landfill side and they've been used to benefit someone, we're delighted with that.
I know. It's win-win. No? It's win-win every which way you look at it.
And every second doctor and nurse and management come along to say, lads, you're fantastic. Phenomenal work what you're doing. He's a fair play to you.
And this would never have come about if this return scheme hadn't been introduced, of course.
It would have never.
And do you find, actually, just one quick question before I let you go, I want to bring in our other John. A lot of people complaining about the temperamental machines only taking some of the bottles, not taking more. Do you have that problem at all?
No, like, I suppose we're professionals, I don't know, because, like,
John.
Yeah, but when you open in the bottle, you see, you cannot put your hand in on top of the belt.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Just leave the belt to the work. Just put the can in with the barcode and take it in. A lot of people are putting their hands in and it's not taking them. We get a few in brought back to us, but then you turn around the other way. But you have to keep them dry. Make sure they're not wet.
Okay, top tips here. Keep them dry. Don't put in your hand. Let the belt do the work.
Don't put your hand. Leave the belt do the work and it'll work away. Like I got through one, six bags in about 40 minutes.
Right.
Maybe less, you know, but it's so simple. But people be throwing them in, but it won't take them because the belt is operating all the time. So you have to really put on slowly onto the belt and don't put your hand into the machine.
Okay. Okay, John, will you hang on there? I want to bring in John English now. John, good afternoon.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Katie.
You're also an expert at these machines now.
I wouldn't say I'm an expert. But people talking about them being temperamental. They're not really temperamental. They do get full. And when they get full, you'll see a big red X. Mm-hmm. And all you have to do is tell the attendant, look, that's full. And all they do is just go in and change a skip. You wouldn't be waiting any more than 2 minutes. But I do agree with the other John there. People have a tendency to put their hands into the things. No, you just put the can in and let it go from there. And sometimes a can might come back out at you. Take it off, put it back in again, and it'll go in. But I will say one thing, though. I was talking to your researcher earlier. Up to 3 or 4 or 5 days ago, when I would be going down to the shop to do my normal business, I would probably pick up maybe 2 cans. They'd be on the way to the shop. You know, I wouldn't, I'm not going to leave them there. Mm-hmm. So I pick them up and I have a box here in the back and I just put them in. And when the box is full, I go and exchange them. And of course, I'm keeping my tokens for Christmas. Christmas won't be costing me anything. And, you know...
So that's what you're doing. Sorry, John. So that's what you're doing. Yeah. You're just keeping an eye out for discarded cans and bottles.
I don't go looking for cans and bottles. But if there's one presenting itself on the street in front of me, I'll pick it up. But then you can have the disappointment of picking up a can and there's no recycle thingy on it. So... You have to carry that can then to the nearest bin and throw it in.
Literally carrying the can.
You're literally carrying the can. No, but look, it's a brilliant thing. But the point I was trying to make there was, up to the last few days, I'd always be able to pick up 1 or 2 cans. I haven't seen any cans now over the last 2 or 3 days.
Uh-huh.
And what I have seen, and I said it to the researcher this morning, get the children back into school. It's the children that are picking up the cans. I was in Lidl the other day and I was standing there and there were 2 young guys, I'd say they were 13 or 14, and they had huge big bags, black bags, full of cans. And that's their pocket money. And I say fair play to them, you know. I can remember years and years ago when we had this thing in where you could bring back a glass bottle, you'd get maybe a penny for a bottle, but then you could find a whale. Now, a whale to us that time was a big flagon bottle. You know, the
2 litre ones, yeah.
The 2 litre ones, the glass ones, they were whales. Now, so I call the big plastic bottles now whales. Right. But I said it to your researcher this morning that I was walking down the street with a friend of mine the other day. We were just standing there talking. Next thing I spotted two whales at the side of the street. And then, my God, two whales now being two large 2 litre bottles of
the water. And there, that's the big deposit return then, isn't it? How much you get for those? You get the
25 cents
each. Okay. Nothing to be sniffed at, yeah.
No. So, and two of them there, that's 50 cents. Sure, that's a pint of milk. But anyway, I was about to walk over and pick them up. Next thing I saw this young fella coming. He must look, and if he's not already in an athletics team, he should be. Because he ran, he picked up the bottles, and Kate, you couldn't see his heels with the dust as he ran down the street. It was like he had found a tenner on the street. He was gone. You know, so that's the only opposition. Oh, we have the older people. We have the younger people that are picking up these things. But look, it's great. It's absolutely fabulous. And they should have done this years ago.
So it is actually, you're saying absolutely has had the impact that Roderick O'Gorman was promising it would, which would be to stop the litter and to make sure that a lot of these cans and bottles that would have been just on the street and, you know, thrown around the place.
Yes, and another thing, people shouldn't have a stigma about picking up a can. I mean, Joe now, I mean, I was annoyed with Mr. Duffy because he said he was driving up some street and he saw this fella going through a bin, taking out cans. He said it was very sad. Thank him. I mean, you know, for God's sake. I mean, if people wanted, they're making money. I could actually, if I wanted to, I could live on cans alone. If I wanted to, and maybe our team might get somebody to do a program, stay with one person for a week and let them see what they could do, you know, live on cans alone. How much,
John, do you think you're, and as you say now, you're not actively out there searching, but you're just seeing what's lying around. How much have you made, you think, out of these so far?
Well, look, you see, Kate, I don't go to pubs or whatever. I have a few cans here in, you know, at night. I maybe drink maybe four cans. Mm-hmm. No, so, I mean, every week then I have a... Look, I would probably be getting about maybe €8 every time I go to the...
€32 a month, and then you're
exactly
looking at
into the little box when
$3.50
you go to
a year.
Home.
Yep.
Yes, and that'll pay for Christmas. And another thing too, and look, that the lads in Cork, the Johnnies in Cork, got the jump on me on one thing. What they're doing is noble, but what I had thought about, I'm an animal lover. I mean, that's a great way for charities. I was, you know, I was doing up little designs here, cans for cats. You understand? To neuter and spay cats around the country, you could have all kinds of organisations collecting cans for whatever they need. Do you understand? I mean, it is. You saw the money that these lads are making in Cork. Now they have a huge population going into a hospital as such, that they're making 3,000, you know, over a month kind of thing. I mean, it's lovely. But, you know, there are other ways. I mean, you know, for other charities and stuff to, you know, if people just put their heads together, they'd be able to sort out a lot of problems.
Well, indeed. Well, and as you say, the three Johnnies down in Cork did just that and put their heads together. John Collins, well done to you guys. That's a fantastic scheme that you've got going down there. Yeah. And
thanks very much.
And you're obviously going to...
Do any of the lads in Cork, do you ever have a day off, lads? I'll go down there and...
There's not a lot of people willing to come in and give a hand, but you see, we've all sweet backs as everyone. It's very hard to do that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You have it. Yeah. You've security very tight down there, minding your bottles and your cans. John, listen, I have to take my last break. Thanks to you both. We'll go to that break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And that's it. We're almost out of time now. Just one last text there. In our holiday caravan park in Killarney, the young lad working there said he could get €100 for all the cans we disposed there. Well done to them. Indeed, well done to all of them. that's it today. Chris O'Connor was on sound. Our broadcast coordinator was Shane Galvin. And today's programme was produced by Shan O'Gorman. So enjoy the rest of the afternoon. Stand by now for Ray.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Step into summer with our new curtain designs and colours. Explore our latest designs in store or online.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.